This podcast may contain language that is not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. We use a lot of curse words. We talk about sexy things, or try to talk about sexy things. They're as sexy as they can be in Hallmark movies. And there will be plenty of talk about homosexuality. So if homosexuality bothers you, you've obviously found the wrong podcast. Move right along.
Are you ready?
4, 1, drop. Kiss. Going cheerleader style.
Hey! Nice!
I like it.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies. In this podcast, we recap one Hallmark romance movie and episode for your irreverent ears. Today, we're recapping the movie Mix Up in the Mediterranean. What? I have some fun facts for you, Tam.
How fun are they?
Oh,
really?
They're
fun.
They're so fun. They're actually facts that you've already heard because we had to re-record this podcast episode because there was a high-pitched, like, dog whistle, well, audible to humans, but it was still very annoying, that went throughout the entire recording. So we just said no, and we re-recorded.
So this is the second attempt.
Second round. Going for it. And let's see here. So fun facts. This movie has two twins in it, Josh and Julian, and they grew up in a town called Yakutat, Alaska. It is a real town. It has a population of 649 people. Yay!
And it's fun to say Yakutat. Yakutat.
It is fun to say. I like it. It's only accessible by plane or ferry, and it's a surfer's destination.
In Alaska.
In Alaska. Are you ready to put on your, like, little surfer's booty and your wetsuit and just, like, go out there and hit some waves, dude?
Only if I gain, like, 300 pounds for additional insulation, because I do not like getting in cold water.
So they do recommend that you are used to cold water surfing if you decide to surf in Yakutat. I know this is shocking news to you.
So when the hot water goes out in my apartment and I have to take a semi-cold shower, that probably doesn't count.
No. No. No.
Not up to cold water surfing then.
Okay, fine. Next fun fact, which is a very exciting fun fact. Callum Blue, who plays Henry, the husband of the twin Julian, bears a striking resemblance to Chris Harrison, host of the Bachelor/Bachelorette series. While Chris Harrison is recently facing backlash for siding with a contestant who claims her celebration of the Old South was relevant in 2018, but not such a good look in 2021. I love that look on your face, Tam.
I have no, just keep going.
Well, you know, 3 years ago, so it was a long time ago. Three years.
Oh, back in the olden days. I got you.
Exactly.
Before all those civil rights protests changed everything, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, I'm with you.
Anywho, because of Callum Blue's striking resemblance to Chris Harrison, stars Jessica Lowndes and Jeremy Jordan, who love the Bachelor TV series. While they were filming in location in Malta, Jessica and Jeremy and Callum recorded a little Bachelor spoof, which you can see on Jessica and Jeremy's Instagram account. We will put a link to it in our show notes as long as it still exists. It is delightful.
Yeah, it was very entertaining.
Not so fun fact. Well, Hallmark included a light gay storyline in this movie. No one who played a gay character in this was gay or openly gay. There are gay actors who are afraid to come out because they don't want their roles to be limited, and also gay actors who would love the opportunity to have a part, to play a same-sex couple. Hallmark failed big on this one.
But they're moving sort of in the right direction.
Yes, they are. Even with the super light gayness that was in this, there were a lot of Hallmark fans who did not watch this movie because they don't watch that type of movie.
The type of movie with beautiful gay love?
Yes, beautiful gay love.
Oh, they are not going to want to listen to this because I have some deep down gay fantasies.
Ooh.
About being in a tripod. I'm just kidding.
I want to lick you from your head to your toes.
See, but that's not entirely accurate, because even if you had like fantasies about being in a threesome with two gay guys, they probably would not have any interest in you.
No, they'd have to be bisexual.
Right. Yeah. Yes. No, that's it. That's a bisexual fantasy. That's a sweet spot right there.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
I'm going to be, I need to be excused for a few minutes. I'll be right back.
2020 for Hallmark was the year that they started having gay plot lines in Hallmark movies. So while, yeah, there was a pandemic, which not so great. Best thing about 2020, gay plot lines started popping up in Hallmark movies. Yay!
They should like rebrand 2020 to like take out the twos and put ho and mo in replace of them. So it's like 2020 homo.
Nice.
For Hallmark.
Final fun fact. They are participating in the 87th International Escoffier Culinary Competition. I thought Escoffier was some fancy French term, but instead it's a reference to Auguste Escoffier, who revolutionized French cooking in kitchens. He's super famous in the French world. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. Do you have a synopsis for us?
Yes, I do. So I did something a little bit different, and I did not change it after last time, because I thought it wound up okay, because oftentimes I will separate the synopsis from the character analysis, and this time I kind of mooshed it together. Sounds so it's good. A synop analysis.
Wow, that sounds very scientific.
Thanks. I made it up right now.
Should I call you Dr. Tamara?
Oh, I'd love that. Only if my first name was Doctor, though, because I would not go to get my PhD. I would die. Went to college to get my bachelor's while I was working full time, and it nearly killed me, so I don't think I have it in me to go that far. Okay. And Julian invites his twin brother Josh to accompany him to the Escoffier cooking competition in Malta. Both are played by Jeremy Jordan. The brothers, although identical, are worlds apart in almost every way. Josh is a line cook at a small diner in Alaska, Yucatan. Say that three times fast. Yucatan. And Julian runs an upscale restaurant on the Upper East Side of New York. Josh is an everyman who is single and favors plaid and baseball hats. Julian is serious about fashion, uses a lot of product, probably manscapes, speaks French at every opportunity, and has been married to his husband Henry for 3 years. That's right, folks. He's gay, in case you haven't got the gist of that early on in our conversations. Julian's plans to compete in the competition...
Competition?
That's what they call it in Malta? Julian's plans to compete in the competition are jeopardized. Josh needs to step in to cover for him, but will they be found out by Meg Westcott, played by Jessica Lowndes, who is an event planner that is running the contest? She's smart, determined, and has her hands in everything, and although she grew up in privilege, she's determined to make her own way in the world. This competition is her big break, and she needs it to be perfect. The stakes are slightly high in this mixed-up twin romance. Who will prevail?
We will start our journey into the movie Mix-Up in the Mediterranean. Little note here, there are two twins, Josh and Julian, and Josh has to dress up like Julian, and in like one, maybe two scenes, Julian dresses up like Josh. When Josh is pretending to be Julian, we call him Joshian. That way, you don't need to have the visual representation, since this is not a visual medium. So, when Josh dresses up as Julian, he is wearing some slacks, some kind of like a sports coat, impeccably pressed button-down shirt underneath said sports coat. He's wearing probably some loafers. His hair is like brushed back, and he looks immaculate and very clean. And so that is the Joshian look. When Julian dresses up as Josh, so he's Juliash, he's dressed up in jeans and a t-shirt with maybe a flannel on the outside. He's got a lucky ball cap on. His bangs are brushed forward, and he's way more cash. So that's what's happening there.
Juliash, absolutely genius. Love this idea.
We open on the landscape of Yucatan, Alaska. It's beautiful. It's scenic. It's a very small town. And we go into the diner where Josh is working. It used to be his family's old diner, but it has been taken over by somebody else, and now he just works as the cook there. But Josh has bigger dreams. He dreams of taking the diner back over in the family name and cooking whatever he wants. However, right now, he's got a boss that's not very happy at him because Josh is too busy making obscure desserts from the 70s like Baked Alaska and not making cheeseburgers for the starving patrons out in the front. Josh ostensibly calls his brother Julian, but ends up talking to his very charming husband Henry. While both of them, Josh in Yakutat, Alaska, and the diner is in the kitchen, and Henry is in the fancy J. Northrup restaurant kitchen cooking. Henry answers the phone and says, "Please tell me I've won a trip to a deserted island," as there's all this commotion going on in the very busy kitchen, in stark contrast to Josh, who is the only person in the kitchen that he's in. Josh responds, "You're going to Malta next week. What more do you want?" "Oh, so much more," Henry replies. Josh asks, "Where's my brother?" And Henry says, "Well, shaking hands and kissing babies, obviously." That explains why Julian did not answer the phone. And we go out into the dining area of J. Northrup. There's barely anybody in there, but there is one older, distinguished-looking gentleman talking on the phone. And beautiful young lass walks up towards him. She's got super duper duper long hair, beautiful eyes, and she comes up to the table and the gentleman motions to her, wait, just finishing up there. And then he hangs up the phone and he says, "Hey, I'm sorry, I was on the phone acquiring a castle in Europe. It's been a little tricky, but you know, I always get what I want." Meg, the beautiful young lady, replies, "It's fine, Dad. I know how you are." So they are in the restaurant, J. Northrup. Meg is having dinner with her, or lunch, excuse me, with her dad. She's in charge of planning the 87th International Escoffier Culinary Competition in Malta. And her dad, he belittles what she's doing, saying, "Oh, yeah, you're doing that cooking show, aren't you?" Meg says, "Dad, it's not a cooking show. It's the equivalent of the Olympics for rising chefs." Her dad is just not having it. He's like, "I've created all these hotels for you. I've created this empire. And what's the point of having an empire if your only child won't run it?" She looks at him with a glint in her eye. She laughs evilly and she says, "I want my own empire."
Oh, Meg's an evil genius. Great, great.
And he's a little taken aback, but he's like, "I like that evil attitude. It's very definitely something that I would go for, but I want you doing that over on my side of things, not doing event planning." He also reminds her she is actually taking advantage of family property because the event is being held at a hotel that he owns. And she says, "Let's just keep that on the down low. I want people taking me on my own merit." So while they're having this conversation, Julian walks up to Preston Westcott, Meg's dad, and says, "Hello, I'm Chef Julian Northrup. Bienvenue." He introduces himself to Mr. Westcott and totally ignores Meg in the process. Julian says, "How about we get in business with each other so I can have J. Northrup's in all of your hotels?" And Meg's dad says, "Well, you know, we already have our own food services, but we do need someone to run it, so maybe you could do that." Meg, being ever the better person, even though Julian is being a royal ass, says, "Dad, that's not his thing. He's actually a really good chef. He's one of our chefs." And Julian says, "What? Our chef? Excuse me, I am J. Northrup. I am not ours anyone. I am my own." And Meg says, No, I'm running the Escoffier competition." Julian says, "I thought that was Heike Mueller." who runs the academy and the contest. Meg clarifies, saying, "I'm running the event." Julian looks at her with disdain and says, "Well, I guess there has to be somebody there to hand me the trophy when I win. And, you know, if I could swing the elbow back, oops, I'm sorry. Did I accidentally hit you in the balls with that?"
Rightfully so. Rightfully so.
Yes. Thank you. Vindicated. Meg kind of grimaces and laughs. Ha 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 ha. She just thinks he's being a royal ass. And she should be elbowing him, but she is way better of a human being than I am. Julian walks off and Henry approaches him and says, "Hey, your brother's on the phone." Julian and Josh get on the phone together, and Josh says, "Hey, I just wanted to wish you luck at the Escoffier competition." Henry is looking at Julian like, "Come on, you say the thing, do the thing." And Julian's like, "Well, you know," as if you were reading cue cards, "I was really wanting to ask you if you could go to Malta, seeing as how we haven't seen you since the wedding." And Henry's there with the thumbs up, looking all very eager and excited, because actually I think he's kind of more into Josh than Julian, but that's just, I don't know.
What? It's his rustic good looks.
It's his rustic
and his good lack looks. Of products.
Josh is like, "I can't go to Malta." And Julian responds with, "Why are you still at that restaurant anyways? It's not even our families anymore." Josh, with a steely glint in his eye, says, "It will be," as he stares off stoically into the distance.
I love how you turn everybody, like, partially into an evil genius in this retelling. Like, all pandemonium's gonna break loose at any moment.
Julian says, Oh, also, all throughout this episode, y'all, just be prepared for really bad French pronunciation. Brace yourselves. I've had, like, if we were doing a French podcast, it would be like 1 year of fifth grade French. And I don't know what Tammy's experience would be. Watched a French foreign language film that one time.
Like, I think I'm like -2 French because I can't even do my mouth the way that they do. Like, I've tried. The only thing I can do is ho ho ho.
So yeah. Our French, not so good.
But we're apologizing in advance.
Yes. Our attempts are genuine. They're just bad. So Julian responds, "Les trois, c'est répété." Josh says, What are you doing with the French? You're not French. You grew up in Alaska. What's with the French accent? Come on. Why do you pretend you're French? What does that even mean? And Julian says, "History is repeating itself." Julian is upset because instead of moving forward with his life, Josh has hung out in Alaska. Josh could have gone to France with Julian, had a culinary scholarship. He could have worked at the restaurant in New York with Julian, but he's hanging on to the past and trying to get that family restaurant back. Julian's not happy about it. Josh, for some reason, is convinced and says, "Okay, fine. I'll go to Malta. Keep your pants on about me and my future. And just, like, bring down the fake French to, like, a minimum." Low, dull roar there. Everybody flies to Malta. Not on the same plane. Josh enters the hotel lobby in Malta. It's beautiful. There are wonderful arched ceilings. There's lots of natural light. There's a gigantic floral couch in the middle of the room. I'm not exactly sure why. Josh is so busy looking up at the beautiful ceilings and the skylights and is just distracted by the giant floral couch as he's walking into the hotel, and Meg is busy looking at her iPad, doing different planning and walking, that they literally bump into each other. They look at each other. Their eyes catch. Is this love? Well, maybe for one of them, Josh. And Meg looks at him and she's like, why am I suddenly intrigued by this horrible human being that I saw just the other day in New York? And Josh's breath is kind of taken away by Meg. There's love. There's little heart eyes going on. They look at each other kind of smitten. And Meg is smitten and confused because he's gay and married. That's not such a good combination for love. You look like you want to say something.
It's like, I thought she was more confused. Like, how is this pompous ass in front of me dressed in flannels, jeans, and a t-shirt? I couldn't tell if she was just like, what is that? That's the last thing I thought I'd see you in, Julian.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
That's the cynic in me. You see heart eyes. I see what the hell are you wearing?
Perhaps she's also confused because she sees his suitcase and is like, I have that same suitcase. I personally have to take a moment here and be like, I really doubt that some rich trust fund chick has the same suitcase as fucking Josh from Yakutat population of 695. No.
Hard same.
He's got like some Target or Marshall special Walmart kind of suitcase from somewhere. He does not have some like really nice suitcase, and she does not have a Target Walmart special suitcase. I'm just like, no, 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 no. But let's pretend. Let's just pretend for the moment. I don't know why they decided to use this as a talking point, but let's pretend that they do have the same suitcase. Josh says, well, I know this suitcase is mine, not only because I walked in with it, but also because, and he opens the front pocket and swoops out his lucky ball cap. He's like, this is my lucky ball cap pocket. And she says, that's where I keep my chocolate. She has emergency chocolate. Oh, what's going on there? I see a face. I see a face.
If you have emergency chocolate, you would not put it on the outside pocket. You put it on your carry-on, Meg. Come on.
So she has a chocolate pocket. She has a lucky hat pocket. Is this love?
What's going on? A chocolate pocket. Just it put all kinds of pictures in my head that it shouldn't. I'm sorry.
Well, what kind of pictures are those?
Just sounds funny. Chocolate pocket. I got the giggles. Forgive me. Chocolate pocket. Oh.
So once they've confirmed that they both have special pockets, they go on their separate ways.
At one point, though, he asks Meg, oh, do you know where the check-in counter is? And I was like, that hotel is not that complicated. Outside of the floral couch that's sitting in the middle of nowhere for no reason, like, there was obviously a checkout counter, like, slightly behind Meg that was kind of in his eye shot. So when she was like, oh, it's right there. And I was just like, dude, like, if that was a pickup line, that was an interesting way to go about it. But I was like, have you been in a hotel before, Josh? Do you know what a hotel check-in is?
I don't think he
has. Maybe. So Josh makes his way upstairs and Julian and Henry have arrived before him. So he goes to their room to say hello. And before I watched this movie, I purposely did not check to see if Josh and Julian were played by the same guy or different people that were actually twins. So for the whole, like, this scene where they finally meet, I was, like, so enraptured with, is that him? Are they doing the split screen? Are they doing the Parent Trap theme? Are they, like, is it the same guy or is it different guys? It is the same guy, so spoiler. But, but when Josh shows up at Julian and Henry's lavish hotel room, it's a beautiful room, almost completely white with blue accents and an inexplicable couple of mini lemon trees in the corner. Did you see those?
It's very Malta.
Oh, is it? I was like, do Maltese people like lemon so much that they have to like inject them into the hotel room so they have them at their leisure when they eat or drink whatever they eat or drink that necessitates lemons? Josh goes to the hotel room. Julian opens the door. They share an awkward hug. My mind says awkward hug so you can try to hide the double that is playing the opposite twin. And Corinne rightly pointed out, no, they just have an awkward relationship. Therefore, hence the awkward hug. And I'm like, oh, that makes more sense. I thought it was just bad acting and like contorted views to not show the face of the obviously not twin.
No. They have an awkward relationship.
They have an awkward relationship and an awkward hug.
In my notes, I say J&J tentative bro hug.
That's a great description. J&J tentative bro hug. It's been 3 years since they've seen each other, Julian and Henry's wedding, and Henry sees Josh and they actually embrace in a very warm hug that you would expect to get with your own brother, who's a twin. But
I have in my notes, Henry, big hug hug.
Big hug hug, not awkward bro hug. 100%.
Yes.
And Henry says, Josh, you look good. Like Julian, if he were dropped in the wilderness for a couple of weeks. And then found. And Josh says, nuh-uh, my brother would look much worse than this. And Henry concurs. Julian scoffs and says, stop picking on me. I gotta prepare for the competition. And Josh says, too bad I got all the cooking skills and I'm taller. The sibling rivalry is strong between these two. After that, they apparently don't have anything to say to each other. So it's an awkward beat of silence. And they say goodnight. Josh leaves so he can rest. And Julian can have super hot makeout session or sex with his super hot husband.
Ooh.
It's in Tamara's world, not the Hallmark land. I'll just give a moment to picture that in my head.
Oh, Callum Blue. He's a hottie. Yes.
Back at Julian and Henry's hotel room, they're giving each other fashion advice. Wear that tie. It brings out your eyes. No, those pants aren't tight enough. We need to fully show off your package, etc., etc. When Jess walks in wearing a rumpled beige shirt, he flaunts it in front of Julian and Henry. Like, what do you think of my fancy shirt? And they look disgusted.
Hey, it's got collar. It's got a collar and buttons down the center. So
super fancy. Super fancy. Even though it looks like he just took it out of his suitcase and it's moderately rumpled. Julian explains that Josh is going to be in front of the creme de la creme of the culinary world and needs to dress as if he's going to a fancy restaurant.
Tam,
and Josh
I says, think you need more on your creme.
Creme de la creme.
Yes.
Pretend perfect. Like you're hawking up a loogie. Hawking up the loogie. And Josh says, this is what I would wear to a fancy restaurant. And Julian throws up his hands and says, I can't believe I share DNA with this person. He goes to his suitcase and tries to throw it open dramatically.
Because he doesn't share jeans with him because he doesn't wear jeans.
Da-dum-dum-sh.
You love me.
I do. I wouldn't be doing a podcast if I didn't. He tries to throw up his suitcase so dramatically he completely throws his back out. He's incapacitated and hobbles over to his bed in pain. He can't move, let alone get out of bed. What are they going to do? He has to register for the competition in the next 20 minutes. Dun, dun, dun. It takes them 2 minutes longer than it took me to figure out that Josh can pose as Julian and register for him at the competition. Because, of course, that's what's going to happen. Josh asks for Julian's ID and says, I can do this. We used to do it as kids. We used to pose as each other all the time. Of course, what twins didn't do that? If there are twins that didn't do that, please let us know. Reach out to us via email because we'd love to hear your stories.
OneDryKiss@gmail.com.
Julian begrudgingly agrees and he tosses his ID at him and says, you be friendly and you smile. And Henry adds, try to say French words every once in a while because he's got to embody Julian fully. Josh tries to head out the door, but Julian stops him and says, no way, honey. You are not going to impersonate me dressed like that.
No, no.
A little later, we see Josh in the hotel lobby. He's looking very dapper. He's wearing a blue brushed linen suit and some very tight slacks.
They are very tight. Not as tight as best slacks in the last flat and last bridesmaid.
No, I know. I was like, thanks to you, I was checking out his package fully, like trying to see like how much it cradles everything in his nether regions. I was like, I think we're going to have like a tight pants rating somewhere sometime where, you know, we can rate the tightness of the pants and the appropriateness or inappropriateness of the package at hand. And he's wearing a white dress shirt and a white pocket square that matches his dress shirt. And as he's making his way across the lobby, somebody calls out to him, Julian! And it takes him a moment for him to realize that they're talking to him. And he even audibly says, nope, and keeps walking. But it is Etienne Leduc who stops him and calls out. Etienne Leduc
is Julian's old culinary classmate.
A.K.A. Nemesis.
A.K.A. Nemesis. Joshian plays it off by saying, are we? And Tien obviously came over to throw some undercover shade.
I love how he says, we! Yes, tis I! Yeah,
because that confirms that he's French, because he says, tis I. Nothing says French like saying tis I. And so Antien in all his undercover shade says, I'm so surprised to see you letting you compete since your restaurant is struggling. But don't feel ashamed. Not everyone can have a successful bistro like me, Antien.
Is that undercover shade?
That's like Antien level undercover shade. Like he thinks he's just coming over here to make conversation. Everybody else in the free world knows that he's throwing some shade. So
it's like an eclipse.
Yeah, an eclipse of undercover shade. There's many layers to this Antion, and all of them are bad. Joshian is taken by surprise by the news of his brother's restaurant. He did not know that his bistro was struggling when Meg finds him and offers to help him register. Oh, yes, yes, I forgot. You were coordinating the competition. Très bon.
Tam, I have a message.
Yeah.
I have a message for Etion. Well, my message for Etion is, fuck you.
This just in, Curran's message to Antion, fuck you.
Back to our normally scheduled broadcast.
So Meg offers to help him register after he says très bon. Meg says, oh, that's right. You trained in Paris and I know some French. As a matter of fact, je parle assez français et j'aime beaucoup être pris un sandwich entre vous et votre mari. And that is my very
poorly... You might as well just said Prius, 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 Prius.
No, I Google translated a phrase that I thought Meg would say in the real world, which is, I speak French too and would very much like to be sandwiched between you and your husband.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And then she asks where this husband is because that's what she wants. And he says, oh, he's packing. He kind of stutters because he has to think, oh, yeah, that's right. I have a husband. Meg smiles and says, oh, I can't wait to meet him. You both make such a handsome couple. And I understand your brother is also here. What does he do? And Joshian says, oh, he just cooks. And Meg says, oh, maybe one day he'll be at this competition. And he laughs long and uncomfortably. They go to fill out the contract. And this seems to concern Joshian. He says, a contract for what? And Meg explains, it's just saying you are who you are. You're agreeing to be photographed. You'll abide by the rules, like yada, yada, yada. Josh sputters and says, oh, let me get my ID out. And Meg says, no. I know who you are. And unless you have an evil twin or something. He's thrown off and asks, where do I sign? And she says, right there where it says signature. And poor Meg must be thinking that he is not the brightest bulb in the box, because not only can he not find the hotel check-in desk, but he doesn't know where to sign when it's obviously the line that says signature. But she's still interested or intrigued by Joshian. He signs it J. Northrup because that's his brand. And she asks, can I see your wrist, please? And he gives it to her and she puts on this red Fitbit looking thing. This is your chef bracelet. You have to keep it on until the end of the event to make sure there's no chef espionage.
Dun, dun, dun. Excuse me. You know how I prevent chef espionage, Tamara?
How's that? How do you do that?
With a bracelet. That's how I prevent it.
Okay. Okay, Wonder Woman.
How does that work? Well, there's a bracelet. That's how that works.
Oh. This bracelet must be a super special bracelet. So this bracelet is super special because it's indestructible, waterproof, and can never come off of his wrist for the whole of the competition, or else he's disqualified. What the
beep? Oh, it's like Wonder Woman's cuffs.
Yes. Bing, bing, bing. Almost identical. Josh runs upstairs to Julian and Henry and thrusts his wrist up in the air and says, we have a problem. Julian and Henry contemplate their next move. They have to drop out of the competition. And Josh is like, yeah, while you guys are talking about that, what's this I hear? Antion was talking crap, saying your restaurant is failing. Julian and Henry admit that they're about to get foreclosed on, and if they win the competition, they were going to use the prize money to keep it going. They wanted to use the recognition to bring in more business. And Josh says, I will help you keep your restaurant. I will compete as you. You're my brother, and the Northrop family needs a win.
Yes!
And Henry's your sous chef. He can be my sous chef. We got this. The Rocky theme plays softly in the back. as Julian gets misty-eyed and says, hello. And
everybody's getting inspired.
Oh, yeah.
Henry's your sous chef. Henry could be my sous chef. And even though Julian is apprehensive, he says, you have to look like me. You have to dress like me. You have to cook like me. Basically, he has to be the pompous ass who speaks French constantly, even though he's from Alaska. But he finally relents. They are doing this, but will they get away with this? They all scream, yeah! And do a high five with the freeze frame shot with the starburst rainbow behind him.
Nice.
That was a little creative license at the end. They did not do a freeze frame high five with the rainbow starburst background behind him. But in my world, that's how I saw it. Yes. To the Rocky theme playing softly in the back.
It's beautiful.
Mm. Get a little misty eyed.
So after they've had their triumphant three-way high five, freeze frame, rainbow, bring behind them. Henry and Joshian head down to the reception. Henry's like, okay, here's our game plan. We mingle for 5 minutes and slip away. Be fancy. Julian's fancy. You be fancy. Because I love Callum Blue so much and his accent is so beautiful, I'm not going to try and imitate it. He has an excellent British accent that makes one want to swoon, along with his hunky, hunky, broad-shouldered self. Anytime that I'm speaking as Henry, just imagine a beautiful, subtle, yet elegant British accent along with it.
Mm. I think you should try. Mm-hmm. Come on. For us. Oh. Just one British accented phrase.
Oh no, this is going to be bad. Okay.
That's what I'm hoping for.
She's making me do it.
Just one.
And it's going to be bad. And mm-hmm. It may end up sounding like Lucky Charms leprechaun. Okay, here's the game plan. We mingle for 5 minutes and.
Not bad. Keep going. No, keep going.
And then we slip away. Be fancy. Make sure to capture Julian's essence.
Chef's kiss.
As Henry's whispering this to Joshian, Meg excitedly approaches them and says, Chef Northrop, welcome. Joshian replies, Miss Westcott, bonjour. And Meg says, don't you look sharp? Joshian looks at her with hearts in his eyes and says, you look, wow. You look Trey Fabulous. And I was like, oh no. No, no, Joshian. Your French is not so good. Henry intervenes, seeing the shit show that is going down in front of him. Also is like, Joshian, you have not introduced me, your husband, to Ms. Westcott over here. And so he's like, husband, husband. He says, hi, I'm Josh's husband, Henry. And Meg is thrilled to meet him. And she says, oh, let's go over and meet some of the contestants. Oh, yes. Are you wiggling your finger at me?
There's one moment that happened when they met Meg that I absolutely loved. Is that when he realized that he's supposed to be Julian and Henry's supposed to be his husband. He kind of like snuggles up to him and tries to like lay his head on his shoulders as Henry's like talking to Meg. And Henry's kind of like bumping him off like, that's not how we do it. Just because we were gay does not mean we need to snuggle at every opportune moment. So it was like that was like a nice little like moment for me that I enjoyed immensely.
It was a good bit of physical comedy, and unfortunately for the listening audience, there are several kinds of sight gag kind of things in here that perhaps don't work as well via audio, but you did an excellent job describing that. And also, no, I'm no
good
shade.
Good dick.
Oh. That was not a dick. That was a compliment. And I was going to say that later on, the actual Julian lays his head on Henry in the same way, but it does not look horrible and forced and weird like it does when Joshian tries to do it.
With Henry like so subtly bumping his shoulder like, get off me.
You're being weird, Joshian. You're being weird. So Meg takes them over to a group of chefs. Etienne is there. Boo! There's a German lady chef, and then there's a Irish guy chef who speaks with absolutely no Irish accent whatsoever. I would say the accent is either American or Americanadian. Everybody's introduced. Etienne and Joshian are like, oh, we went to school together. And Joshian says, oh, you should hear the stories that I have. Which maybe not the smartest thing to say when you actually don't have any stories to share. And Etienne says, oh, I would love to hear these stories. Joshian is like, oh, right. I opened my mouth. And Henry comes to the rescue and he's like, do I have a story for you? There was this time Etienne locked himself in his room to perfect the souffle. And Joshian is like, oh, yeah, ha, ha, really? Oh, and Etienne is like, yes. And now my souffles are perfection. And the German lady chef says, you think souffles are difficult. You should try making a strudel.
That was a weird flex. So like, souffle, well, you think that's hard. You should try strudel. Okay, lady.
The flex makes sense because...
Are we going to have a strudel souffle showdown right now?
Well, if you've watched the Hallmark movie Winter in Veil with Lacey Chabert
and
Tyler Hines, a lot of it's all centered around strudel and how difficult it is to make.
Well, then it must be true. If Tyler Hines and the Hallmark movies say it so.
Hallmark movies are practically documentaries, so...
Okay.
Therefore...
Right.
Once Joshian realizes that he is way out of his depth socially as Julian, when Meg says, hey, will you come with me and check out the outdoor kitchen stadium, he says, yeah, gotta go check out the outdoor kitchen stadium with Meg, sorry. And Henry's like, don't do it. And he's like, do you really want me sticking around here blowing our cover with Etienne?
Me and my foot in my mouth,
I'm out.
I put in my notes, Meg and her eyeshadow and Joshian leave because she's wearing
her eyeshadow definitely for most of this movie is like another character.
Oh,
it's
my God.
It's very bold.
I want to blend it. I want to blend it so bad. I just got my makeup brush in my hand and I'm twitching.
You're like walking up to the television with the brush and you're like, come on, work.
It's true. Dan comes to watch TV the next day and he's like, why are there all these smears all over the TV? And I'm just like crying in the corner rocking, I tried.
A football newscaster comes on the TV and there's like eyeshadow over his eyes from where you like tried to fix hers.
Perfectly blended eyeshadow, I'll have you know. Thank you very much.
Dan's like, I didn't know he wore Hawaiian Fire, Wet and Wild eyeshadow.
Wet and Wild, no. That was eighth grader Tamara. I have elevated. Oh. Dan's like, Dan Patrick has never looked lovelier. What's going on?
I've never seen Dan Patrick with a smoky eye. It's amazing.
A subtle, beautiful smoky eye that is not overdone.
Josh and Meg sneak away to the outdoor chef stadium. Doom, doom. She wants his brutal honesty about the kitchen setup. He says everything looks great. Oh, and by the way, are we required to use these workstations to practice? And she says, no, I don't think so. You should be fine to practice wherever you want. Good question, Joshian. She's like, you know, you're kind of like two different people. And he's like, you know what? We should really get back. And... they go back to the party. While they're walking, Meg says, oh, who's that with Henry? And Henry is speaking with an older gentleman who's slender and tall and has close-cropped silvery hair. And Josh says, As they approach, Henry's like, look, Joshian, it's Henry. Henry.
As he points to himself, it's Henry.
It's Henry. It's me. No, he did not point to himself and identify himself. Fortunately, Josh is not that bad at it. Henry's like, look, Joshian, it's Chester. You know Chester, don't you? And Josh is like, oh, yeah. And Meg says, I thought you didn't know, Chester. He says, oh, the sun, it just is so bright. Time difference is, there's a lot going on. And
Meg, I have to interject because I hated this part, because being a person that is really bad with facial features and facial recognition, I almost think like I have something wrong with me, that I oftentimes will be like, I don't know you. And then they'll be like, Tamara, we spent 2 years in college together. And I'm like, crap, yes, we did. And I have to play it off with a huge smile on my face and like really backpedal. And the fact that like he did this and was like, crap, I don't know that guy. And then gets introduced and she's like, I thought you didn't know him, was just a dick move. Don't do that if you can. If you can help it. Just if somebody says they don't know each other and then are introduced them, let it slide. Just let it slide. PSA totally from Tamara, please let it slide.
I think that they were just trying to drive the point home.
Very well maybe, but you're teaching the public a bad lesson, Hallmark. Do better.
I agree. That documentary style, bad. Bad documentary style.
Like you said, it's true to life, right?
I used to be pretty good with faces until I worked as a receptionist, which is what I do now for the chiropractor's office. I see so many people in a day, they all just start blending together and everybody looks familiar. And then you're on dating apps and you see lots of faces there. And it's just like, it's a shit show.
Weird thing is that I used to be really good with seeing, like, with recognizing faces when I was a photographer for so many years. I would see somebody when I used to live in Fresno. So I would be shopping around and I would see somebody across the room and I would remember the picture I took of them. He has two kids, a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they took pictures on a white rocking horse for Valentine's Day or something like that. It was like the weirdest recognition.
Right. So you need to be like Cam Jansen. Did you ever read those mysteries as a kid? So Cam Jansen was, you know, along the Encyclopedia Brown kind of line of things, that sort of age level of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a photographic memory, but she took it to the next level, because what she would do is when she would want to remember something, she would look at something, make a camera motion and say, click. You just need to be like, you have the job. Click.
Honey, I don't know why this lady's following us around the Costco going, click, click, click. I think I know you. Click. Wait, come here. Click, click, turn around. Click, click, click. Oh, I think that maybe in our advanced age, our mind just shut off and said, nope, no more. Not taking any more information.
Well, you know, I'm about to move to the senior center any day now, so.
Young at heart, old in facial recognition. That's all I'm saying.
Joshian meets Chester and tries to play it off like he's known Chester all along. Henry and Julian met Chester another time when they were in Malta, as one often goes to Malta. You know how that is with our international traveling all the time, all those places. No. Tam's shaking her head no. I'm shaking my head no as well. Chester had a restaurant called Chester's by the Sea that was popping back in the day, and they got along like gangbusters. Everybody parts ways. Henry and Josh go back up to the hotel room to spend time with Julian, who is neglected and has gotten tired of playing words with friends by this time. And they're chatting about the dangerous people who could jeopardize this whole thing, Chester being one of them, Etienne being another, and Meg being the third. Oh, also, shit, I forgot to mention, slightly pivotal to the plot, when Chester and Meg and Henry and Joshian are down at the reception, Heike Mueller approaches and says, Chester, what are you doing here? You need to leave. This is invite only. Chester says, why, Heike, your love for me knows no bounds. She's just mad because I'm the youngest Escoffier contest winner at the age of 25. And now she's running the competition, but she did not win over me. Mwahaha. And I'm thinking, you know, I think she's more bitter because of something else. Perhaps you were a little too loosey-goosey with your affections and maybe led her on a little bit during that Escoffier competition. Perhaps she was a little distracted and you used that to your advantage. Oh, Chester, you scamp. I would not put that past you, Chester.
The last recording you said, I think they need to do a Hallmark movie on Chester and what happened between him and Heike and all of Chester's shenanigans.
I think that's a great idea. How did you come up with that?
I said you said it in our last recording. Corinne said in our last recording that there should be a show with Chester.
I'm so full of good ideas.
Because he's the most interesting character out of everybody.
He is. He is genuinely the most interesting character in the entire movie. There are different Hallmark movies where I'm like, oh, best friend, I would rather see a movie about you. Or, oh, daughter, you're actually kind of cool. What about a movie about you instead? And in this one, it's Chester. Chester's the one I want.
You're the one I want. You're the one I want.
If I'm going to choose the one I want, I'll choose Callum Blue. Well, there's a knock on the door. Henry thinks it's room service. He answers it. It's just... Oh, fuck. Then, sorry, I didn't finish. You distracted me. You distracted me. Heike says to Chester, you need to leave. You did not get an invitation. Heike says to Meg, Meg, get security and get him out of here. That's your job, isn't it? And Chester says, no, no, no. Don't you worry your pretty little head there, Heike. I'm just going to go on my merry little way. But I just have to say that ever since you've taken over the competition, all my invites have been lost. Suspicious. Highly suspicious. And then they all part ways and go up to their room. Ta-da! Okay. I actually finished it this time. Then, Henry, Chester, not Chester, damn it. Henry, Julia, Josh are up in the room. There's a knock on the door. Henry says, oh, that must be the room service. He goes to open the door, and in waltzes Chester. Why, hello. He looks around the room, and he sees Julian and Josh together. There's two of you, he says with a gleeful look on his face. I love it. Chester suddenly becomes one less issue because he has just X'd himself off the list. When they explain to him what's going on, he says, let me help. I am here for it. How can I be there for you? They say, well, you know, we could really use a space to practice our cooking because we can't do it in front of everybody else. Chester says, well, do I have the spot for you? And then we go to Chester's by the Sea, which is no longer a running restaurant, but he still somehow has the building that is fully functional and has floor-to-ceiling windows that look out over the ocean, and it is a gorgeous space. So it's Chester, Henry, Josh. They're all in the restaurant, and they're looking around at the space, thinking about how they're going to be practicing there, thinking, if only we could get Julian here. Then who staggers through the door but Julian himself, dressed as Josh? Yes, two can play that game. You're not the only one who can dress up as the other twin. He's in his jeans, the t-shirt, the flannel, the lucky baseball cap. He's got it all.
Juliash, I presume?
He is dressed as Juliash. Julian immediately takes command. He says, Henry, you go to the market and get ingredients. Josh, you go to Kitchen Stadium for supplies. And I will stay here and have a chat with Chester about how his business failed.
And then freeze frame, quad, high five. Break.
And maybe we'll have a little makeout sesh on the side.
Oh, I would tag Chester as possibly bisexual, which is why they like are so endeared by him. Because maybe they just had like a little threesome way back in the day.
Mm-hmm. They could have an open relationship.
They sure can. Josh goes back to the competition kitchen for supplies, where Meg shows him the most elaborate highfalutin security system, which is his bracelet, and completely unnecessary. He has to scan it at the workstation in order to gain access to his supplies to his portable kitchen. And he's like, yeah, I just, you know, need a few things to practice. And she's like, practice? Why, where are you practicing? And he very elusively says, at a friend's. And I'm like, why do you need to know? Mind your business, Nosy Parker. But Joshian instead asks how things are going. And they have a heart-to-heart. One of many heart-to-hearts that they have in this movie. Meg shares that this is her first big event and that she always wanted to be an event planner, especially after she single-handedly planned her grandparents' anniversary at just 16 years old. She was a prodigy. Honestly, that doesn't sound super impressive, but what do I know?
Doesn't she say that that's the only other event that she's planned?
Yes. After she planned her grandparents' anniversary party at 16, that was like her last big party. Conversely,
she seems really qualified.
Yes. The next step is, of course, the 85th annual Escoffier Culinary Contest. It's a natural progression.
Natural progression. Mm. She didn't get that job at all because she had connections to her daddy's hotel.
No, we're not talking about that. We are not talking about that. She's getting it on her own merits. There is no nepotism here whatsoever.
I bet there are like way more qualified event planners who were crying when they got turned away.
You don't know how good that party was. You don't know her grandparents' anniversary party. You don't know.
There was like 10 plus years prior. What has she been doing all this time in between?
Oh, I know, right? After she shares this, Joshian says he always wanted to cook after he and his brother helped his parents in their restaurant. And Meg says, oh yeah, your brother. I keep forgetting about him. Let's spend an exorbitant amount of time discussing him, shall we? Did your brother want to go to culinary school, she asks. And Joshian gets a faraway look in his eyes and says, he did get a scholarship to a culinary school, but he decided to stay in Yucatan to try and take back his parents' kitchen. And Meg says, oh, that's nice, trying to keep the family legacy going. As long as he's happy, that's the most important thing. Is he? Is he happy? We're like, what the fuck, Meg? Anyways, Joshian says, I think he's happy, but sometimes he wonders what would have happened if he actually took that scholarship. Meg understands. Her dad wants her to take over his family business. And sometimes she thinks it would be easier if she did. But Joshian asks, would it be better? After Josh asks if it would be better, Meg realizes that she has a confidant. And she says, I have a confession. When I first met you at the restaurant, I thought you were an arrogant jerk. But you wound up being a decent guy. And I'm glad I'm getting to know you. And he says,
aww.
So am I, Meg. So am I. Team Northrop are back at Chester's by the Sea, which is what I call Josh, Julian, Henry, and Chester.
Yeah.
Team Northrop.
Go Team Northrop.
Henry's explaining how the competition will work to Josh, who is now in it to win it. First level. We make the same thing, but we use our own ingredients. It's a fish in a bouillon base, which sounds absolutely disgusting. There are 10 chefs making this bouillon base, and they will be bumped down to 5.
Bouillon base.
Bouillon base.
Bouillon base.
Bouillon base.
It's a bouillon.
Bouillon. Bouillon. I'm not going to do it. Nope. I will be wrong, and I will stand on this hill wrongly and say bouillon. Nin.
Great.
We're not here for facts. Anyways, making whatever they want.
Just a second. I did not know what a bouillabaisse was. Partially knew how to spell it, which I still was not correct about spelling it, but I was close. It's a traditional Provençal fish stew originating from the port city of Marseille. So it's a fish stew.
No, that's what bouillabaisse is, but I'm talking about bouillabaisse. It's a totally different thing. It's actually fish sticks poking in cream sauce. That's what my bouillabaisse is.
Cream sauce?
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'm inventing it as I go along. Just smile and nod. Go with me. Go with me here.
I love it. Yay, that sounds amazing. Can I have that with some clam chowder as well?
Blasphemy. You don't eat bouillon with clam chowder. That's too much fish. Where was I? 5 chefs move towards the second round, where they'll be tasked by using the key ingredient in whatever manner they see fit, which will be black truffles. So you can make whatever you want, but you must use the truffles. And Chester interrupts and informs them that the black truffles cost about a mere $900 a pound. I and Josh both scoff loudly and are under the same impression that food should not cost that much. Julian says, good food should. And Julian says if they make it to the second round, they're making some recipe, which is some fancy pants things and some fancy pants sauce. I said that not him because I never wrote it down. In the final third round, 3 chefs will need to make peach melba, which is the traditional dish that the Escoffier, whatever his name is, created back in 1892.
You all have to use the same ingredients for the same thing, but you can put your own spin on it. And that concludes the competition roundup. Next, we find Meg at night running across a beautiful courtyard after a street vendor yelling, "Can I please get some chocolate?" But he pedals off, leaving her in a lurch. Joshi intends to wind up anywhere that Meg is, so there he is. He walks up and says, "What happened to your emergency stash that's in your chocolate pocket?" And Meg says, "You know, it's been a long week. I haven't eaten and everything's closed." And Joshian says, "There's a kitchen back at your hotel." And she says, "It's closed." And he's like, "Hello, your dad owns it. It's not closed to you. You can do what you want." And she says, I completely forgot that my dad owned that hotel and I could totally go in the kitchen and get some food.
Nepotism.
Yay, nepotism. And so they walk back towards the hotel and start chit-chatting, and Meg brings up the integral topic of Josh and asks Joshian, "Does your brother ever get lonely?" I'm sure there was some context to that, but of course, like, she asks an irrelevant question about somebody who's not there that she constantly seems to want to talk about. And he says, "Yeah, you know, I tell him he should move somewhere where the people outnumber the bears, but now he just wants to stay in Yucatat." And he says, "What about you? Do you have a special somebody?" And Meg says, "No, I had somebody I was seeing for a while, but I found out he was lying to me." And he said, fibbingly, when he was working, he was just lying at home playing video games, lying. He was a liar, and if only he didn't lie to me, it would have been okay, but I just needed honesty, and he kept lying.
Liar pants,
which does not bode well for Joshian playing Julian.
But usually people like liars, so I don't know why.
I know, right? I just don't know what her deal is. Like, come on, Meg. Be a little more flexible in that area. And she says that after her boyfriend lied to her, she couldn't get over the lying and betrayal for months. She heard somewhere that if you can't get past something after 2 months, you never will. So she took that rule to heart, that stupid, stupid rule. And she didn't get past the betrayal after 2 months. And they even tried to keep it going for a few more months, but it ultimately fizzled out.
Don't you have that tattooed on your arm?
No.
Over your heart?
If I abided by that rule, I would be mad all the time and not have any friends or people in my life because, yeah, no, that's not a good rule to live by. I am a bitter bitch and I suspect everybody of everything. So I would be alone, probably not doing this podcast.
I love you.
So it did not work out. She looks at him with her piercing blue eyes and he gulps and says, "I'm sure you'll find the right someone eventually. I mean, look at me. I'm a huge arrogant jerk and I found somebody." And of course, he's speaking as his brother. "But enough about me. What do you look for in guys?" And she has particularly low standards.
She does.
Besides not being a liar. I mean, the normal stuff. It'd be nice if he has a job and his own place and, you know, good teeth. And Joshian looks dubious and says, "Wow, employment, a residence, and dental? Woohoo, way to shoot for the stars, Meg." So she adds ambition. That's her little, like, check mark that she needs. She loves ambition. She doesn't care if you're a street musician or a painter, as long as you have ambition. Just like me, Meg. Meg Westcott. I have ambition.
Oh, I just said in my notes, heartbeat plus ambition equals awesome guy. That's her, like, equation for a guy.
Just like Meg, I have ambition. I know that I'm very fortunate, but I'm going to make my own way. And I don't want people thinking that I'm handed everything, like a posh hotel to host the culinary competition, whose account you landed, I'm sure, by yourself after one party when you were 16. Alone. And I'm sure she got college tuition. She has an inheritance waiting for her and possibly an allowance from her daddy. She's making it on her own. She's an independent woman.
Yes, she is.
As she's going on about her independence, Julian and Henry round the corner. They're just taking a stroll out and Julian is not dressed as Josh because he was sick and tired of his clothes. And as Joshian sees him walking towards them, he pulls Meg into an awkward hug so she can't see them and shoos his brother away. He's like, "Get out of here. Shoo, 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 shoo. Go, go." Meg kind of melts into his embrace and says she wishes she could meet a guy like him, except for the small matter of him being gay. And Josh says, "Yeah, except for that small little detail, we would be perfect for each other, not taking it all into account that he is gay and married."
Two things, actually. Two things that would keep you apart.
Gay and married.
Two things. Gay and married.
Although, if they do have an open relationship, possibly something could work.
Gay?
But
no.
No.
No, no, no.
No. Bisexual? Open relationship?
Could happen.
Potentially. Depends on what agreements are in the, their relationship. Yeah.
The next day, Joshian and Henry are at the prep station, and Henry's being very detailed in instructions. You have to do it this, you have to cut it this way, make sure you do this, make sure you do that. And of course, Antion is next to him, and he overhears this and says, oh, Julian, you're taking instructions from Henry, which is a fucked up thing to say because they're partners in life as well as cooking. And Joshian says, oh, blow it out your ass, Antion. We are partners, not only in life, but in cooking. I should have read my
before
I made that statement. I know myself like a twin. And Henry says, yeah, Antion, go hang in a corner or whatever it is you do to prep. And Antion's, oh, he's so offended. I was just wishing my old friend luck. And Joshian looks at him pointedly while sharpening his knife and says, you don't need luck when you have skills. He's giving him a serious, I will cut you look, which scares Antion, and he minds his own fucking business, while Henry looks on in awe and says, you take after Julian more than I thought. Joshian sees Meg a little ways away, and he gives her a thumbs up, and Henry tells him, quit it. We're supposed to be married and partners. So he goes back to his cooking, and she ducks away to take a call from her father. He has acquired another castle in Germany and needs Meg to help translate, and since you're not doing anything important, you want to just pop on down here right now? And Meg's like, actually, I'm in the middle of this competition, you know? And Dad's like, oh, okay. And she's like, you're not going to watch it, Dad? He's like, I'll try to catch it later if I can, but I'm a big, stupid, important man doing big, stupid, important things.
And he's in this big, stupid castle that has the ugliest gold filigreed room in Rococo style, like
super ornate and ridiculously overdone.
I was like, oh, did Trump decorate in here?
I know. Oh, it's unfortunate. He's an unfortunate
so
hotel somewhere, unfortunately purchasing it with the unfortunate decor. And so Meg hangs up and walks away dejectedly, and Joshian sees this and goes after her. As he does. And he asks if she's okay, and she relays that her dad sucks and still thinks of her as a little girl running around in his office in pigtails. And he is charmed and says, I need to see pictures of that stat. And she's like, don't make me laugh. And he's like, no. We're not going to laugh. We're just going to sit here angrily. Let's be angry together. Another cute little moment between them. And Joshian says, you know, my dad didn't have a lot of confidence in me either. He put a lot more in my little brother. And I was like, oh, snap. Are we talking about real Julian? Or are you speaking from yourself? Like, there's that whole kind of, like, parallel where when he says this statement, I'm like, are you speaking as yourself or are you speaking as your brother? So all kinds of questions. Right. And then he goes on to say family stuff is complicated and sometimes you got to find your own swagger no matter what others think of you. Swagger, swagger, swagger.
Yes, yes, yes. So we reach the start of the competition. But before we get to that, hey guys, it's me, Corinne, interrupting the episode.
What's happening?
Oh,
what's going on?
Well, Tamara, we talked about this. I decided that we should split this episode up into two pieces.
I need to know what happens in the competition. I need to know.
Well, you can wait until next week. This episode was so freaking fucking long. It was over 2 hours long.
See?
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
I like a full meal from start to finish. Mm-hmm. No matter the size, no matter the time, I think we should just go full on, whole hog. Let's do it. Are you with me, listeners? Anybody?
Anybody? you may say that, but the one piece of feedback that I got that was not positive about our podcast was the length. They said, you know, it's a little long. And that was at an hour and a half, not 2 hours and like 15 minutes.
Fair. I wish we could edit ourselves more.
And yet we had such a good time making this episode that we could not stop talking.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I concede. I think we should break it up. I'm okay with that because I don't want to cut out any of our lovely little bits and interactions that we have.
But I will say, listeners, if you are all pissed at us for splitting the episode, blame me, because Tammy wants to keep it whole. She just wants to keep
it's all her fault.
Contiguous. Not Tamara's fault.
Direct your anger at Corinne.
Yes. Direct.
Right over there.
Direct your anger at me. I edited the episode and it took me several weeks to do, which is the main reason why I wanted to split it, because I was like, I took so long. We recorded, I kid you not, 4 hours.
You're like, I can't listen to your voice anymore, goddammit.
No, no, not that. But I was just like, I put in so many hours into this. It needs to be split up into two because of all the time I spend on it. It's all my fault. Just at me. Except I'm not actually on any social media.
That would be me. Be gentle on social media if you have ill feelings about this episode getting separated.
At Tamara and sympathize with her and talk smack about me. It's fine.
We'll talk smack together behind her back. She'll never know. So we hope you join us next week when we conclude this episode of Mixed Up in the Mediterranean.
So exciting. You can see us on all the social media.
One Dry Kiss on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. One spelled out O-N-E.
Tamara manages the Facebook and the Instagram, and I poorly manage the Twitter and probably say stuff that I shouldn't. Oh, well.
We'd also love your rates and reviews. So if you liked this episode, please make sure to rate and review us. And if you have special thoughts about the length and the time that we record, we would also really love to hear that, because we are driving blind and still don't know what the heck we're doing at this point.
You can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. You can shake your fist up in the air and shout, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Ew, ew. Or you can say, thank God that's over.
Correct. Thank you for joining us, and we bid you adieu with
one
dry
kiss.
Kiss.
Mwah. There was a guy before I got on that was like serenading himself right outside my apartment building very loudly. He had a pretty nice voice, and he is shockingly the most pleasant sound. Good times in LA.